The following podcast is set for one fall. Introducing from Brooklyn, New York City, they call him Sulla Monster. And this is Sulla Monster Sounds Off.
It's business time, baby.
The Sulla Monster Sounds Off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Welcome to episode 437 of the Sulla Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, April 24th, 2016. I am the Sulla Monster. Man, this was a shitty week. I want to, first off, right off the bat, apologize for the silence over the last few days. I've been going through some shit myself. If you were following along on Twitter, I haven't been feeling good. And the doctor thought I might have an ulcer. It doesn't look like an ulcer after all. I had to go in for a test this week. They gave me propofol, better known as the Michael Jackson drug. I could see why he liked it so much. I went out, I woke up, and I don't remember a thing. I need to get me some of that stuff for Raw. I'm still not feeling great. My throat is still sore from the frickin' tube they had to shove down there, and they had to take a few biopsies, but, my voice still works. Barely, but it works. So, if I don't sound as good this week, you can chalk it up to that. My voice is still pretty weak. It's not 100% yet, but I want to just say thank you for the concern. I did get some good news this week. We are now available through Google Play Music for Android and web users. So, if you have an Android device, or if you want to just, you know, use your web browser, you can stream this podcast now through Google Play Music. We were finally added to the lineup. This is something that's been 6 months in the making. We were approved 6 months ago, but they were still getting up, I guess, the whole podcast aspect of their service. And now it's up and running. And it's just another way for people to listen to the show. If, let's say, one way doesn't work a particular week, you've got a gazillion other ways you can tune into this podcast. You can add Google Play Music to the lineup, so that's very cool. I wanted to let everybody know about that. We are also still offering listeners of this podcast a free trial of the Audible service using our URL, audibletrial.com/Sulla Monster. You can sign up free for 30 days. You can sample the service. You've got over 180,000 titles to choose from, including a lot of wrestling books. You can cash in on that. You get one free audiobook that you get to keep no matter what. It's a great service, so check it out. Use our link when you do so, audibletrial.com/Sulla Monster for your free audiobook download. And don't forget, you could also make a donation here to the show at any time on thesullamonster.com, a PayPal donation. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. We got a lot of people who wanted to be part of this t-shirt rumble that we're doing this week. So because we got so many names, the only thing better than picking one winner is picking two. So I will be picking two winners at random who will get a free Sound Off shirt. We're going to wait. We're going to do this later in the show because we got a lot of other stuff, more important stuff to get to first. So figure right around the middle, maybe after the NXT review, we will get to the shout outs and we will pick two winners in our t-shirt rumble this week. So you'll want to stick around for that and see if you are one of the lucky winners. We lost a few people this week, Prince being one of them, 57 years old. Prince and David Bowie. And we're not even halfway through the year yet. I think we can all agree that 2016 can fuck right off. Some people wrote into me, they were terrified that I might go off on Prince the way I did when Michael Jackson passed away. Think back to episode 75, which still lives on in infamy. Here's the thing. I didn't go off on Michael Jackson. I went off on the media circus around Michael Jackson's death. Okay, there's a difference. And it was. It was so over the top and ridiculous that if I had it to do all over again, I would go on the exact same rant. Because it was ridiculous. So there will be no rant here, so you don't have to worry about that. I heard Prince's music a lot when I was a kid growing up. In fact, I would say offhand, the three artists who come to mind that I heard the most in my house as a kid probably were Michael Jackson, Prince, and Hall & Oates. So now you know where my love for Hall & Oates comes from. Thank God my parents weren't Culture Club fans. I'd say probably When Doves Cry, probably still my favorite song of his. I know that's the easy answer, but it is. I like Kiss a lot, too. That was another song that I liked. Purple Rain, not so much. I know Purple Rain gets a lot of love. I was never a big fan of Purple Rain. You know, I don't really know what else to say. I mean, he was a transformative figure in music. You know, the guy changed his name to a symbol at one point. I mean, how many people can say they did that? It's kind of annoying, actually, I guess, if you're somebody who had to write about Prince. But, yeah, it's sad to see somebody so talented end up going out the way that he did. You know, it looks like he may have been hooked on pain pills. Apparently, he had a lot of problems with his hips for many years. I'm sure it'll come out very soon exactly what happened here. I think Prince, like a Freddie Mercury, like a Michael Jackson, is someone whose music will live on forever. I mean, his music will transcend generations, which I think is really the true mark that he leaves behind. Also sad was the death of China this week. 46 years old. She was found dead in her bed by her manager, who had the cameras rolling when he walked into her apartment. He's been working with her, apparently filming a documentary on her life. And this guy, who went to check on her, I guess, when he hadn't heard from her, was filming when he walked into her apartment and found her body. He says he is going to finish the film, and it might show him walking into the apartment, but it will not show him actually finding the body. Well, that's nice to know. He said there were prescription pill bottles for Ambien and an anti-anxiety medication in her bedroom. No alcohol, no illegal drugs were found, at least according to him. He's also in the process of getting permission from her family to have her brain donated to CTE research. She becomes the second member of the original incarnation of DX to pass away, Rick Rude being the other. She is the first and only woman ever to win the Intercontinental Championship, first woman ever to enter the Royal Rumble match. She actually appeared in two of them. She made her mark on the wrestling business, for sure. I mean, you can't deny that. Whatever you thought about Chyna, whether you were a fan of hers or not, she certainly left her mark. And, you know, for as tough an exterior as the Chyna character had on TV, right? She was this big, badass woman. The woman behind the character was very sensitive, was very vulnerable. And the one thing that she seemed to be searching for that she never felt that she got, whether it was from WWE, whether it was from the fans, was acceptance. And so she medicated and she fell into this black hole in her life, and she would kind of crawl out of it every now and then. Oh, you know, Joni's doing better. And then she would fall right back into it. Jim Ross, in a column that he wrote on Fox Sports, said that he had been in touch with Joni recently, and by her own admission, she wasn't exactly where she wanted to be in life, but she seemed to be doing better. She was doing well enough. And, you know, look, I watched part of the video tribute that Vince Russo did for her because everybody was telling me, you got to watch this, you got to watch this. He was very close with Joni, and he was obviously hit very, very hard by the news of her death. It was not unexpected. And even he said he saw it coming for at least the last 2 years. He saw this coming. But hearing the news did not make it any easier for him to accept. I didn't watch the entire video because it was very tough to sit through, and it was an hour and a half long. But Russo said that if she could see all of the outpouring of support, all of the positivity, because most of the reaction, you know, people say, oh, when somebody dies, you say good things about them and you kind of ignore all the bad stuff that you said. Chyna was mocked by a lot of people for a long time because she would post these videos sometimes that she just didn't look like she was all there. She would say some very outlandish things. It was very easy for people to mock her and make fun of her and crack jokes and whatnot. But I would say the large majority of the comments that I saw on social media were very positive about Chyna. And so all of this outpouring of positivity for her right now, you know, maybe this wouldn't have happened. Maybe this wouldn't have happened had she known, you know, how much love there was for her out there. Maybe things would have turned out a little bit differently for her. And so that makes this even sadder. I mean, we'll never know, but it makes it very sad. And I think, you know, whatever the coroner actually finds in her system when the report comes in, I think, really, at the end of the day, you know, this is a woman who died of a broken heart. you know, what she did to make herself feel better because of that, who knows? Like I said, well, I'm sure we'll find out in time. And it obviously cost her her life in the end. But at the end of the day, she died of a broken heart. You know, she was alone. And I think that's the saddest thing of all about this. You know, here's a woman who came out of nowhere. She trained with Killer Kowalski. Shawn Michaels and Triple H got a look at her one day, and they immediately saw money. Okay, what better way to get heat than to bring in a woman who could kick the asses of the other men, and they couldn't do a thing about it, right? You're not going to hit her back. They couldn't fight back, and the two of them could hide behind her like a couple of cowards. It got over big time. China's debut is one of those debuts I still remember vividly to this day. You know, grabbing Marlena from behind out of the crowd. They tried to pass it off like it was some fan in the crowd, and Jim Ross on commentary, well, you can't be part of the show, people. I mean, they tried to make it as real as possible, aside from the fact that they then showed you a replay of what happened, which, you know, if it was really a fan attacking one of the talents, you would not do that. But back then, it certainly felt real enough. And then the next night on Raw, she shows up again. She gets in the ring this time. She's ragdolling Marlena. Marlena's like she looks like a 50-pound woman. She's ragdolling her back and forth. How she didn't, you know, break her in half, I'll never know. It's one of those debuts you don't forget. She was a big part of both versions of DX, the original and the one with Triple H leading X-Pac and the New Age Outlaws. The storyline with Mark Henry, where he wanted to date her, that was the beginning of sexual chocolate Mark Henry. Her partnership with Eddie Guerrero, she was his mamacita. She won the women's title later on, even though she didn't want to. She still wanted to wrestle the men. I wasn't a fan of it then. I'm still not a fan of it now that, you know, Lucha Underground does it. So at least I'm consistent. You know, I just thought it was ridiculous, you know, bringing in Chris Jericho in 99, who was a hot commodity at the time when he came in. And another one of those debuts I still remember vividly to this day. And having him lose to China. I mean, I know he ended up beating her, got his win back, but I mean, having him lose to China, it was stupid then, it's stupid now. It was completely ridiculous. And then the whole co-champion thing where they shared the Intercontinental title, the whole thing was just a disgrace. I liked China best when she was with Triple H, and then when she was in DX. I think that was, you know, China at her best. Triple H and China made a great combo. And when it comes to the question of China in the Hall of Fame, which everyone's been asking about all week ever since, you know, we found out what happened. And the Hall of Fame, I mean, look, in the grand scheme of things, the Hall of Fame is small potatoes. You know, she's no longer even with us. But to a lot of people, it's a big deal. She should be in the Hall of Fame. Do you think they'll put her in? All these different questions. And when it comes to the Hall of Fame, if you've listened to this podcast for any length of time, you will remember my rant on episode 368 last year. It was over a year ago now. After Triple H went on the Stone Cold podcast and Austin asked him about China being in the Hall of Fame and if she deserves it. And Triple H gave that bullshit answer about, well, you know, what if an 8-year-old kid were to Google her? You know, what would they find? What would little Timmy or little Tammy find? Apparently, penetration is a barrier to entry for the WWE Hall of Fame. Not killing your girlfriend, like Jimmy Snuka, or pouring milk all over your naked body in the shower, like Sunny did with her wrestling vixen stuff. So, of course, it's ridiculous. Of course, she belongs in the Hall of Fame. She's as deserving as anyone. And as I said back then, she belongs in the Hall of Fame if for no other reason, okay, for what she meant to the career of Triple H. If nothing else, she deserves an induction for that alone. And the same can be said for Elizabeth with Randy Savage. Okay, this is the comparison I made on that episode too. As great as Randy Savage was, as complete of a pro wrestler as Randy Savage was in the ring, on the mic, with his outfits, his mannerisms, he was the quintessential pro wrestler, sports entertainer, call it whatever you want to. Randy Savage was the man. He was the guy. Were it not for Elizabeth, there is no guarantee he would have had the same level of success that he ended up having in WWE. Two world titles, you know, in the main event mix. Especially with Hogan around. I mean, Hogan and Savage were linked together largely because Elizabeth was part of that whole package. And I don't know what was going through Hogan's mind at the time. I'm sure Hogan saw that and saw money, so he didn't mind. But you take Elizabeth out of the equation, you know, maybe Hogan doesn't feel the same way. Maybe Savage is just another guy, another heel for Hogan to steamroll over. I mean, think of the biggest angles of Randy Savage's run in WWE. Every single one of them involved Elizabeth. I mean, the story for years, and I don't know if it's urban legend or not, but the story was always that the whole Mega Power storyline was Elizabeth's idea. Now, whether it was or it wasn't, I mean, that entire storyline is one of the greatest they've ever done. It revolved around her. The storyline with Jake Roberts. It started with her opening that gift at the wedding reception and out popped the snake. And then later on, you know, this was way ahead of its time for WWE back then because they were still very, you know, cartoony. But when they had Jake slap Elizabeth across the face and then Randy Savage cuts one of the all-time great promos backstage after the match, hey, was he overacting? Of course he was, but it was still fantastic. You know, him collapsing on the floor in agony just at the mere thought that he allowed his woman to be physically assaulted by this guy, you know, by this madman. You think back to the Randy Savage Ric Flair feud for WrestleMania 8. She was mine before she was yours. And then the heels threatening to reveal the giant centerfold of Elizabeth at the Hoosier Dome. You know, I bring all of this up. There is a point to this. I bring all of this up because as deserving as Savage was of that Hall of Fame induction they gave him a few years ago, Elizabeth was just as deserving. Because without her, maybe Randy Savage doesn't win those two world titles. Maybe he's just, like I said, just another heel for Hulk Hogan to beat. And Hogan did beat him. He beat everybody, except Warrior. But Savage ended up being so much more than that. He ended up meaning so much more than that to the company when his run was over and done with. She played an instrumental role in his career. So too did Chyna with Triple H. Triple H, when he started out in WWE, he was a skinny little mid-carder. They put Mr. Perfect with him. That didn't last long. Perfect walked out. They put Mr. Hughes with him. That didn't last long. And then along came Chyna. And all of a sudden, didn't take very long, Triple H started to gain some steam as a heel. Now, on his own, if we're being honest here, I mean, Triple H, very talented guy, Hall of Fame guy, you know, one of the best. But if we're being honest here, Triple H, on his own, was fucking boring. It's why he has surrounded himself for most of his career with other people. Mr. Perfect, Mr. Hughes, Chyna, Shawn Michaels, DX, Stephanie McMahon, the McMahon-Helmsley faction, Steve Austin during the two-man power trip, Ric Flair, Evolution, Shawn Michaels again, right? Then he went solo and he was fucking boring again. Then back with Stephanie, then he had the Authority. There's a very clear pattern over this guy's career. Chyna is the one who really got him over to that next level. I mean, Mick Foley is the one who cemented him as a main event player. But Chyna came first, even before Shawn Michaels. She was the one in many ways that put him on the map. And I would even say that she ended up overshadowing him. When Chyna was at her peak, and Triple H wasn't quite a main eventer yet, she was more over than he was. She was a bigger star than he was at that time. And you know, there's another similarity when it comes to Savage and Elizabeth and Chyna. They waited so goddamn long to put Randy Savage in the Hall of Fame. Year after year after year would go by. They could have put him in, and they chose not to. Vince McMahon, let's be honest here. Vince McMahon chose not to. And then he died. And finally, he got his Hall of Fame induction. But by then, it was too late. We never got to see that great Macho Man speech at the Hall of Fame. Elizabeth, if they ever put her in, she won't be there to accept either. Although, you know, in her case, she died over 10 years ago, so I'll let that one slide. I mean, when she died, that was before they even resurrected the whole Hall of Fame ceremony. And now Chyna joins the club. She'll go in. I have no doubt that Chyna's going into the Hall of Fame. It may not be next year, but she will go in. Triple H was interviewed this week, and he said, of course she deserves to go in, but I'm not the one who makes those decisions. She'll go into the Hall of Fame. And now they won't have to be fearful about what she might say. Because you know that was one of the reasons they were worried about putting her in. Forget the porn shit. Even more than that. That's what they were worried about. Especially with Triple H and Stephanie and all that stuff. God only knows what she would have said about that. You don't think Stephanie was fearful of what she might say with her kids sitting there in the front row? I think the biggest obstacle to her going into the Hall of Fame while she was still alive, besides herself, because let's be honest here, there were points where that woman was an absolute wreck and didn't belong anywhere near a live mic. But the biggest obstacle standing in the way of a China induction, I have no doubt in my mind, was Stephanie McMahon. And now she doesn't have to worry about that anymore. Stephanie was one of the first people, by the way, to tweet their condolences when the news came out. And people were just tearing her a new one. Her and Triple H both. And I look at this and I say to myself, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. If she says nothing, she's a cold-hearted bitch. And if she says something, she's full of crap and doesn't really mean it. I thought she did the right thing. You know, she said what she said. She had to say it. She did the right thing. You have to acknowledge it. I am 100% sure that they will in some way acknowledge and honor China on Raw this Monday, whether it's a graphic at the beginning of the show or a video package. And sometimes they will do video packages, but they'll put it on YouTube. They won't put it on TV. That's not... If they do that with China, that's not a China thing. They've done that before. But whether it's a graphic, whether it's a video, whether it's having the announcers say a few words on camera about her, you know, this was a major news story. At least it was before Prince dropped dead. Tons and tons of their own wrestlers took to social media to pay their respects and pay tribute to China. They will not ignore it on Monday. They can't, even if they wanted to. They have to acknowledge it in some way, and I expect that they will. But, yeah, let's not also ignore the elephant in the room here, which is that this woman had a lot of problems, right up until the day that she died. She was scheduled to appear at WrestleCon this year, and she no-showed WrestleCon. The promoter wrote on the WrestleCon website, it may still be up there, to all the people who paid in advance to see China, they got their China tickets, they were all excited to meet her, he put a letter up on their website, and he said, you know, we paid for her airfare, she missed her flight. We got in touch with her, we paid for a new airline ticket, and again, she never got on the plane. And there was talk of there being her friends organizing an intervention for her. None of this, none of what happened here, should have come as a surprise to anybody who has been paying attention. You know, she said some pretty salacious things about people over the years. I remember last year the stuff she said about X-Pac when she was on Jim Norton or the Opie show, whatever the fuck it was, and she made those comments about him. And X-Pac called in and he challenged her. He said, "I'll come down there right now and take a lie detector test," and she refused. I mean, this woman had her problems. She had her demons. She had a rough upbringing. I'm sure she faced a lot of ridicule about her physical appearance before she had all the surgery done. You know, that stuff has to take its toll. And then she lost her boyfriend, who she thought she would end up marrying and having kids with. She lost him to another woman, and then she got fired. Okay, that's a tough pill to swallow. And I don't think she ever got over that. And so it led to this downward spiral that she just could not get out of. And I think the least WWE can do is acknowledge her place in history and the role that she played. But the sad part is that she won't be around to see any of it. Adam Rose posted up a response to his wellness policy suspension this past week. He's not happy about it. I'm going to read you what he wrote here, and you can decide for yourself what you think about the whole thing. This is Adam Rose. He says, "I was not going to respond to my suspension, but I feel I have to. I have two sons that will one day read the news about their dad and a sister that died from complications related to a lifelong battle with heroin. So I feel the absolute need and right to respond and let the truth be known. I am pretty sure this response will meet nowhere near the publicity that my suspension did, and that this response is tantamount to career suicide. But I feel for my sons, my sister, and the rest of my family, you, the WWE Universe, have the right to know the truth over my suspension and what it was for. I will also quote my doctor in my response, as he was As shocked and appalled by this suspension as I was, I can say right now that I did not do anything knowingly wrong, and I was taking prescribed medication that my doctor and I followed all the correct protocol on. My actual response and doctor's response will be forthcoming, so before you judge, know the facts. My family and I are still collecting ourselves from this blow. I have zero anger or animosity toward WWE, but feel the administrators over the WWE wellness policy were simply not right in taking this action. I feel facts are facts, and my family and I will be the ones putting our lives back together after this mess. My response will be up soon along with my doctor's. This was posted almost a week ago. This was many days ago. There has not been any response since. No further response from Adam Rose or his doctors, which tells me that WWE got a hold of him and said, yeah, you're not putting up that response. And that's kind of where things are with that. He is obviously very upset over what happened. And I thought it was very smart on his part to put that verbiage in there about this might be tantamount to career suicide. It's almost like by saying that, it kind of shields him. Because if they were to take action against him or fire him or something, it would just make them look real bad. So I thought that was smart of him to say that. And really, when you look at the role that he was in, I mean, I guess as part of the Social Outcast, at least he was getting TV time. And some people are very big fans of the Social Outcast. But realistically, if you look at his career in WWE right now, could it get much worse? You know, you talk about career suicide. I guess the only step below where he was would have been the Damian Sandow treatment, where he just never gets on TV. They fly him in, he sits in the back, and he just doesn't appear. He doesn't wrestle. Because other than that, there isn't much else they can do to him at this point. So, anyway, Raw from this past Monday night was live from London. Well, I guess live to tape from London, England. There was no Raw Instapoll. I wasn't feeling well. I didn't put one up. I thought it was a pretty meh show overall. Is that a word? Meh? Because that's what it was. I enjoyed the Ambrose Asylum stuff at the beginning of the show with Ambrose and Owens and Zayn and Shane and Jericho. And I thought the Reigns and AJ Styles stuff with the Bullet Club was pretty intriguing. I do like all of the new faces on the show. Not every show is going to be a home run. Not every show is going to be overly exciting. But it is good to get some fresh blood on there, which is what they've been doing. It's sorely needed. And with these guys, you know, they say it's a marathon, not a sprint. Well, it's true. I think in this case, with the new talent, it's true. It isn't a sprint. It is going to take time. You're bringing up a bunch of new guys at once. Baron Corbin, Apollo Crews, Colin Cassidy, Enzo Amore. There may be more coming up soon. And all of these new guys at once, you're trying to get them over and trying to get them familiar with the audience. It's going to take time. Chris Jericho beat Sami Zayn in the opener with the Codebreaker after he thumbed him right in the eye. And to the person who tweeted me and said, oh, I can't wait to see how Solomonster justifies this as being anything but Sami Zayn being buried. Okay, this one's for you. He wasn't buried. In fact, he's been pretty prominently featured, I would say, since he debuted on that main roster. I mean, between the opening segment and this match, Sami Zayn took up the first two, okay, maybe three segments on Raw. I don't remember if there was a commercial break during the match. There probably was. The first three segments of the show involved Sami Zayn. Explain to me how that's a burial. Plus, I don't know what you're so worried about. He got beat by Chris Jericho, which according to WWE logic makes Sami Zayn the new number one contender for the WWE title. You should be happy. Kaz and Enzo beat the Dudley Boys to advance to the finals in the tag team tournament. They will meet the Vaudevillains in the finals at Payback after the Vaudevillains beat the Usos here later in the show. So they're not doing the tag team title match at Payback like I figured they might. I was hoping they would. I can't see the New Day going up against Kaz and Enzo, at least not yet. I figure the Dudleys interfere, probably cost them the match at the pay-per-view. And you kind of keep that feud going. I could see Kaz and Enzo working the Dudleys for a few months. Okay, they've done this before. You put these two teams in a program, you let them run for a few months, get the experience, right, working with the veterans. So I think that thing is far from over. And I think the Vaudevillains go on to become the number one contenders. I don't think they win the titles, but I think they're probably the ones going up against New Day. Roman Reigns came out to thunderous boos in the UK. Either that or they were very angrily chanting woo at him. I guess we could add London to the growing list of smart cities, eh? Those damn smart cities. Of course, the very first fucking thing he did was use the I'm not a good guy, I'm not a bad guy, I'm the guy. Right, that's his favorite line. So that was the very first thing he did when he came out. Gets great heat. Problem is, he's a babyface. And if he really wanted to get under the skin of AJ Styles, see what he would do. He should come out next week, and he should go, I'm not a good guy, I'm not a bad guy, I'm a gay guy. And then, you know, AJ Styles can come out, and he can be all like, the gay community! And he could direct Gallows and Anderson to beat him down. See, the problem with that, though, is that it will not make wrestling fans look good when they still cheer homophobic AJ over Roman Reigns. Probably not a good idea. AJ did come out. He talked about becoming a phenomenal WWE champion. And when he walked away, Gallows and Anderson attacked Roman Reigns from behind. And AJ just stood there in the aisleway with this look of shock and bewilderment and almost a look of disapproval on his face. Like, he didn't ask them to do that. And I think between that and the backstage segment they did earlier in the show where AJ and Gallows and Anderson were together and they were talking about their history together and I think it was Gallows is just really over the top talking about how, like, when I grow up, I want to be just like AJ. It's pretty obvious they're not here to help AJ Styles. Backstage after this, Roman Reigns confronted AJ. AJ swore he had nothing to do with what happened, and Reigns wasn't having any of it. This has Tatanka and Lex Luger from SummerSlam 94 written all over it. You know, for weeks, Tatanka accused Luger of selling out, right? He was selling out to the Million Dollar Man. You took the money. In the end, it was Tatanka who sold out. And I'm still holding out hope for my Roman Empire idea, where Gallows and Anderson turn on AJ. They align with Roman Reigns because this man desperately needs to go full heel. Not like halfway heel, you know, half in, half out. Like, go all the way. Give him a live mic on Raw the next night and just let him cut loose on the fans. Okay, let him have his die Rocky die moment, because that's what he needs. He'll fit right in with those guys. You know, it'll be just like Bullet Club, only with Reigns as like a more jacked up Tama Tonga without the face paint. Anderson and Gallows, by the way, will make their in-ring Raw debut tomorrow night. They will be wrestling the Usos. Now, we have to talk about the big news here, which is that at an NXT live event in Lowell, Massachusetts, on Thursday night, Samoa Joe beat Finn Balor to become the new NXT champion, which ends Finn's run at 292 days, surpassing Adrian Neville as the longest reigning NXT champion. Joe wins the title in the very same place he won his first TNA World title, at Lockdown, which was Lowell, Massachusetts. So that city has become something of a good luck charm for him. He also becomes the very first man to ever win the Ring of Honor, TNA, and NXT title. Lots of speculation that dropping the title opens Finn Balor up for a main roster call-up, maybe hooking him up with Gallows and Anderson, the old Balor Club idea finally coming to fruition. I saw the video outside the tour bus after the show where Finn told everybody, you know, see you Monday. You have to understand something. If you follow Balor's tweets, he likes to play with people. He likes to play with the fans. As soon as he said, see you Monday, I figured, well, we know who won't be on Raw Monday. I do not expect Finn Balor to be on Raw Monday at all. I'm not even sure he's done with NXT. He'll probably get his rematch with Joe. He's entitled to a rematch. You know, maybe even at the next TakeOver. And the next TakeOver isn't until June. I think June 8th. Now, would I rather see the Roman Empire or would I rather see the Balor Club? Who says you can't have both? Who says you can't have all of them in the group together? You know, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it doesn't necessarily have to be one or the other, you know, take it or leave it. I don't doubt that Balor's coming up soon. It's time. It's been time for a while now, but I wouldn't expect him, you know, being a payback is any more of a any kind of a sure thing, you know. And by the way, doing that title change at a house show, I fucking loved it. I thought it was great. I didn't have a problem with it at all. I'm all for doing a big title change at a house show every now and then, just to show people, you know, anything can happen at these shows. People already rave about the NXT live events as it is. This makes them even more must-see. You know, things don't always need to be gift-wrapped with a little red bow. It's okay to try something different every now and then. Just look at the reaction in those videos. You know, that went around, the fans, when the title change happened. It's very rare to get that kind of reaction out of people anymore. So I say well done. We learned that at Payback, Natalya will challenge Charlotte for the Women's Championship, and she will have Bret the Hitman Hart, Uncle Bret, in her corner to counteract Ric Flair being in Charlotte's corner. So again, poor Jim the Anvil. Is he even related to Natalya anymore? Is there some kind of like split that I wasn't aware of? Did he disown her? So this is now set up to be the same as their first match back at NXT TakeOver. If you remember a couple of years ago when Natty and Charlotte had a match, Flair was in Charlotte's corner. He wasn't managing her at the time, but he was in her corner, and Bret was in Natty's corner. And, you know, that must mean that Bret's doing a lot better in his recovery from prostate cancer surgery. I was surprised when they announced that, because I was of the impression he was having a slow going. It was a slow recovery. We probably wouldn't see him on TV for, you know, many more months doing anything. But I guess he'll be there, and that's great news. And in honor of Bret Hart's return to WWE television, allow me to share with you this Bret Hart quote that he gave to Total Wrestling in the UK. I think it was this past week. This is what Bret Hart said. He said, "I really think the booking and the writing and the people who are calling the shots are the most ignorant bunch of stupid morons, and they are starting to make Eric Bischoff look smart." And on the subject of Roman Reigns, Bret had this to say. He says, "He's a good wrestler with a great look, but unfortunately when it comes to booking, they drop the ball big time, and it's all due to a lack of imagination and a bunch of people like Stephanie McMahon and Triple H who are more concerned about getting themselves over." Welcome back, Bret. Welcome back. See, the thing I respect the most about Bret, love him or hate him, and I'm a big Bret Hart fan, but whether you like the guy or not, he doesn't give a fuck. You know what I mean? Like, the biggest thing he struggles with each day of his life is finding enough fucks to give. And they still bring him back. It's great. Dean Ambrose beat Kevin Owens in a long main event with Dirty Deeds. Jericho ran out after and laid out Ambrose with a code breaker to end the show. WWE is already teasing a possible Authority return for Raw this Monday since they're in Hartford, which is not that far away from Stamford. I have no interest in seeing the Authority back on my TV unless it involves something between Triple H and Shane McMahon. That I am down to see.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT, I mixed up Liv Morgan with Liv Tyler on last week's show, and you guys didn't let me forget it. Some of you were appalled when I referred to her, Liv Tyler, that is, on Twitter as the chick from Armageddon. It was like, how can you say that when she was in the Lord of the Rings? I got news for you. I fell asleep in the middle of the first Lord of the Rings. So excuse me for not remembering that. Had I called her the chick from Empire Records, I'm sure people would have come at me with pitchforks. Enzo and Big Kaz did the honors on this show for the new champs, American Alpha, on their way out of the territory, if you will. This was a good match. Fans were pretty divided on who to cheer for, so they just cheered for both of them throughout the match. They'd cheer for Enzo Amore, and then they would cheer for Chad Gable, and so on and so forth. Champs won clean with their grand Amplitude finish. We had the debut of No Way Jose. Indie wrestler Manny Garcia, he signed with NXT exactly 1 year ago this month. He wrestled for CWF Mid-Atlantic, and they posted on their Twitter page. They were very excited to see No Way Jose debut. He was having a lot of fun out there against Alexander Wolf. And on his Twitter, Alexander Wolf refers to himself as the first German NXT / WWE superstar. See, now, NXT maybe, but I don't know about WWE. I mean, that can't be true, can it? Somebody investigate this. Let me know. I find it hard to believe that they have never employed a German wrestler in all these years. Wasn't Brackus German? Is it Brackus or Brockus? Who gives a fuck? He was on TV once. I know he didn't last long. He definitely wrestled at least once on Raw, that I know. But anyway, that's what he's claiming on his Twitter page. Crowd was instantly into Jose. They chanted, Jose, 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 to the tune of Sami Zayn's Ole, Ole, Ole. And that reminds me, you know, Corey Graves. Corey Graves is fucking great. He had a fantastic line about that. I think Tom Phillips mentioned the Ole stuff being Sami Zayn's thing, and Graves corrects him. He just goes, you know, Sami actually stole that from the Bouncing Souls. And I laughed out loud when he said that. As much as I love Sami's NXT music, you know, it's like, God, I wish they would have let him use that Bouncing Souls song. Get the whole crowd chanting Ole as he walks out. How fucking great would that be? When they started chanting Jose, Jose, Jose here, as a Mets fan, it brought me back to the days of Jose Reyes, when he was still playing for the Mets. And they would chant Jose, Jose, Jose at him. And that's a great reference for me to use, because Jose was using baseball mannerisms here in this match. In fact, he won with a punch that was made to look like he was throwing a pitch. He literally won with a punch. He knocked out poor Alexander Wolf with a punch, and he pinned him. An illegal closed fist he won with. That's terrible. How about that? A Jew defending the German who got screwed over. We've come a long way. William Regal informed The Drifter backstage that next week he would be wrestling Shinsuke Nakamura from wrestling AJ Styles in the Tokyo Dome to wrestling The Drifter at Fan Access in front of 200 people. That's quite the come down, but in the long run, I think he'll be okay. By the way, Nakamura's theme song just passed 1 million views on WWE's theme music channel on YouTube, and it only went up 2 weeks ago. The closest thing to it on that channel is Triple H's theme song, which has 330,000 views, and that's been up for 4 months. So that's pretty impressive stuff. By the way, if you want to check out that channel, the name of the channel, it's WWE Music, all one word, if you want to check it out. Nia Jax squashed Deonna Purrazzo, who I could have sworn wrestled at a TNA taping recently. They brought her in for one. I mean, you never know. I guess you never know how many of those are left, so maybe it's something where she just wanted to cross it off her bucket list before she can't do it anymore. Bayley was interviewed backstage about Eva Marie, who dies at the hands of Asuka next week. She talked about what a tough opponent Eva is and how she's not somebody to be taken lightly. She said this, by the way, with a straight face. In the main event, Samoa Joe beat Apollo Crews, tapping him out with the Coquina Clutch. The second time on this show that somebody who just got called up to the main roster recently has done the honors on the way out, the way it should be. As he should, by the way, for a man who now holds the NXT Championship. So Samoa Joe stood tall here to end this show. Another fine episode of NXT from Fan Access, if not somewhat uneventful. We'll get Nakamura back on the show next week. So with that out of the way, it is now time. It is now time. I'm going to try to do my Howard Finkel impression. I can't do it as well as Noah does. It is time for the PayPal Rumble. Everybody who made a donation to the show last week, I'm not going to reread those names, but if you donated to the show last week and got a shout-out, you are going to be part of this. As well as everybody who made a donation of $10 or more to the show this week, I will do the shout-outs first, and then what we will do here, get myself organized, we will hop on random.org. They have a list where I can just plug in people's names. And at random, we will select not one, but two winners. And those two winners will get a free Sound Off shirt on me. You just have to contact me, email me, tweet me, send me a direct message on Facebook. But whatever you do, get in touch with me. Let me know who you are. And then you just let me know what shirt you want, if you want the soft cotton or not, and what size. And then you give me an address, and I will send it on the way. Just be aware that when I send these shirts out, it can take, depending on where you are, up to 2 or 3 weeks, especially if you're international. It could take every bit of 3 weeks or so to get the shirt, so just be patient. But here we go. I want to say thank you to everybody who donated this week. We got a lot of people to go through here. We got a lot of people who wanted to be part of this PayPal Rumble. So thank you very much to John Loose Cannon Lopez. It wouldn't be a PayPal Rumble without John Loose Cannon Lopez. So we have John here. We have Deadpool James Herrera. Chuck Lunatic Lentz. Another longtime listener. Hot Stuff Hector Pena. The Chosen Son Andre Smith. Dream Chaser Chauncey Curry. Malicious Intent Michael Cuomo. The Marietta Mauler Alexandru Mata. The Reflection of Perfection Abraham Lara. Dominic the Midnight Delight Dulapre. Is it Dulapre or Dulapre? Should have asked. Dominic's awesome, so he's part of this whole thing here. Fred the Shed Carter. Killshot Keith Hart. Cutthroat Charles McIntyre. Robert Loverboy Lopez. Slingblade Shane McDonough. Brass Tacks Elliot Johnson. Sean Nasty Boy Nilsson. The Dark Serpent Derek Gibbs. Out of Control Cody Thomas. Rodney Hot Rod Cologne. John Pipelayer Pog, still one of my favorite names. Ladies Man Levi Daly. We have the Ladies Man here coming after the Pipelayer. I'm sure those two will go at it here in the PayPal Rumble. We have Glory Hound Gareth Moore. Master Blaster Samarth Gupta. The Seattle Saint Marco Wallace. The Jaeger Bomber Josh Medina. Misfit Miguel Mendoza. Deathblow David Floyd. Adam the Maniac Massaglia. Will the Alabama Crab Dangle Bullard. I had to stop myself there because that is quite the name. No Mercy Nick Horacek. Dark Despair Derek Graziano. The Thunder from Down Under Jack Williams. Keith the Conqueror Krajnik. The Florida Free Bird Bryant Becerra. Adam Ban the Brogue Topless. Ryan the Dagger McTaggart, as well as Money Maxwell McTaggart, Jonathan Killjoy Keen, Thomas the Promise Murphy, Joshua Homicide Herman, Judge and Jury Justin Girardi, Scorpion Scott Keena, I should have had you guys do a stopwatch for this, Doomsday Donde Page, Zach House of Pain Hulker, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Light 'em Up Lamont Ambler, Case Closed Aaron Kloss, Brian the Hitman Hurst, All Action Reginald Davis II, Sweet Ride Raymond Walters, The Dapper Demon Derek Evelyn, The Dallas Dragon Derek Jackson, Soldier of Fortune Umer Khan, Killer Kyle Federon, Dwayne Rainmaker Ribling, in honor of his late mother Justice Jeanette Ribling, Man of War Michael Murphy, Have Fun in Hell, Javier Sanchez. Einstein, Eric Noble. Warlock, Richard Webb. Bad to the Bone, Brandon Joseph. Megastar, Matt Converse. Manuel Hard Knocks Hernandez. Spunkmaster, David Coates. The Maryland Madman, Donald Murphy. Cocky, Chris Damara. Smokin' Steve, Colatuono. Colantuono. Sorry, Steve. Smokin' Steve Colin Tuono, I hope I got that right, who just celebrated a birthday, no less. He just celebrated a birthday on Friday, so happy birthday, Steve. The Crown Prince of Pain, Ian Noel Camelotes, who has a YouTube channel. If you punch in C Entertainment Media, you'll see a bunch of his Chatterbox episodes. You can click on the channel from there and see all of his videos. Pretty cool stuff, so check it out. And last but not least, Montese Antoine Moore, whose song Triumphant that he did for John Cena is now over 300,000 views online. It's a good piece of business, too, so check it out. Facebook.com/AntoineMooreLewis. All one word. Wow. That's a laundry list right there. That's it. I think that's even more than the 30 men they have in the actual Royal Rumble. I didn't count, but that's a lot of guys. This might be closer to the old 60-man, three-ring battle royal deal that WCW used to do. What was that, World War III? So anyway, with that being said, we are now going to do the random drawing. We're going to pick our first winner here in the t-shirt contest. So here's how we'll do this. I have all the names queued up here in a list. When I click on the randomize button, it's going to come back at me with a numbered list of everybody. So being that today's April 24th, we'll pick lucky number 24. If you come up as number 24, you are the winner. How about that? I think that's the fair way to do it. So here we go. We're going to click the randomize button here. And the first winner in the contest is Dominic the Midnight Delight Dulapre. So Dominic, you are the first winner of the t-shirt contest. You'll send me your information. You'll let me know what shirt you want, what size, and we'll get that out to you. So let's cue the list back up one more time here. This will be our second winner since we're picking two. Person who comes up is number 24 is going to get the free shirt. And number 24 is Chuck Lunatic Lentz. So there you go. Dominic and Chuck, you are the two winners of the t-shirts here. Send me your information, all the info I need to get that out to you, and we will do that ASAP. So I want to say thank you to everybody who donated, everybody who participated here in this contest. I'm sure we'll do another one soon. And again, just know that every time you make a donation, however big or small, it is very much appreciated. It does mean a lot to me. Let's get to TNA, because they were in the news this week as well. Ryan Satin broke the story on ProWrestlingSheet.com that there is a multi-million dollar investment firm currently in talks to become partners with TNA, Summit Strategic Investments. They are the company who bought and sold Segway. Remember Segway? I still see mall cops riding around on those things. Remember when they said it was impossible to fall off of, and then the president fell off one? Actually, that does not surprise me. This is a company, this Summit Strategic Partners, that is known for transforming troubled assets, which would certainly describe TNA these days. The CEO of the company has a brother, and that brother heads up another company called Aralux Media. And Aralux Media has been helping TNA on the production side for a while now. Aralux Media is only one division of Aralux Marketing, which is the company that employs Ron and Don Harris, the Harris twins. There's been a lot of talk about Aralux buying a stake, possibly a majority stake in TNA. And according to this report, at least, that doesn't appear to be the case. People lost their shit when they heard the Harris brothers mentioned because of their, the SS tattoos and the SS shirts that they've worn before. And I don't know if they're neo-Nazis or not, but it did make TNA the butt of a lot of jokes this week. Here's the deal. TNA has no money. We've known that for a while, but now they really have no money. And when you have no money, you cannot operate. If they don't make a deal, they're done. So something is going to have to happen in these next few weeks to help keep the company afloat. If Dixie Carter, as is believed, is looking for an investor or investors to buy a minority stake up to, let's say, 49% in TNA so that she can maintain control with 51%, then good luck with that. Because I don't know who in their right mind would ever agree to such an arrangement. Now, on the one hand, you could say, well, this woman, she has kept TNA afloat for 14 years now, somehow. On the other hand, the company has no real future with Dixie Carter as the leader. The company cannot grow under this woman. If it hasn't happened yet, it is never going to happen. The only way to save TNA, okay, and if it can even be saved, is to get somebody else in charge, hope they know what the fuck they're doing, and change the fucking name. Because those TNA initials, okay, they instill about as much confidence these days as the ISIS initials. Okay, basically, you take the skeleton of TNA, and you create a brand new wrestling company. That's really the only chance that they have. New name, new announcers, new set, new everything. And even then, as we've seen with Global Force Wrestling and there's gold up in them there hills, okay, Jeff Jarrett, as we've seen with them, starting a new wrestling company and getting TV, it's not an easy thing to do. If it was easy, everybody would be doing it. TNA already has TV. They've got the deal with Pop TV, so that's a leg up they have on Global Force, which has nothing to show for all of their efforts so far. They've got dick, okay? The only thing that Global Force has, they've got their dick in their hand. That's about it. But the thing with TNA is the ratings have not been great. So yeah, they've got a TV deal, but they lost their replay right on Tuesday nights. The ratings have not been great. They'll go up 1 week, and then they'll be down the next three. So it's not going to be easy for them, even with a new name, to suddenly attract tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of new viewers. And frankly, even if they make a deal, I'm skeptical that anything is really going to change. The only thing that TNA could possibly do, okay, beyond what I just mentioned, once they've rebranded themselves, which they have to do. I mean, it's mandatory that they have to go through some sort of rebranding at this point and completely divest themselves from the TNA initials and the TNA name and anything that even smells or reeks of TNA, Dixie Carter being chief among them. Beyond that, the only thing that might make a difference, they would need to sign away a big, giant, huge name from WWE. I'm talking like a John Cena level guy. Someone who can be a real difference maker. Because these days, it's not so much about individuals anymore like it used to be. It's about brand, right? That's most of the time, that's how WWE sells itself. It's the brand, the NXT. It's the NXT brand. The brand has the buzz. The brand is what sells. There are very few people left these days, I think, on their own who can make a difference. Now, John Cena, John Cena is one of those guys. I'm not saying it has to be him, and it's not going to be him. That's pie in the sky. But if they could find somebody like that and take them away, somebody who can help get them publicity that they need to make people aware of the fact that they even exist. You know, when Bobby Roode popped up at that last TakeOver special, I remember going on Facebook and they have news headlines. And one of the headlines on Facebook read, former WWE champion Bobby Roode appears at NXT TakeOver. It's like, that's the state of TNA right now. They don't even exist. Outside of their own little bubble, outside of Dixieland, they don't exist. They need to make a statement. And in order to do that, they need money behind them. And right now, they have no money. And until they do, all they're doing is delaying their death. Having Mike Bennett wrestle a shirtless Earl Hebner, which is one of the many things that happened at their tapings on Friday night, that's not the sort of thing that's going to save TNA. So by next weekend, there may be a very big update on the future of this company that we could talk about here, but whether it's next week or the week after, something is going to happen. Something is going to have to happen in these next couple of weeks. And at that point, we'll get a better picture of what the future of TNA looks like. I also saw at the TNA tapings, and if you don't want to know anything at all that happened at the TNA tapings, first of all, I don't even know if those people exist anymore, but if they do, skip ahead. I saw at the tapings, they did some really whacked out things. There was apparently a lumberjack match that ended either in a DQ or a no contest because one of the lumberjacks reached in and pulled out one of the competitors. There was some segment with Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy with a bunch of Willows. They had like three or four different people come out dressed as Willow. And Matt Hardy was like revealed as like the ultimate Willow at the end. It's like Willow mania was running wild at these fucking tapings. I think I can't even imagine what this must look like on TV when it plays out. As if one Willow wasn't bad enough. Now we have multiple Willows. Oh my God. Anyway, speaking of those tapings from Friday night, Christy Hemme is gone from TNA. She, I think, was the victim of cuts. Velvet Sky, though, finished up at the taping. She's done. Velvet's a beautiful girl. Okay, I could see her coming in, maybe being a valet in WWE. You know, her boyfriend already works there. Maybe she could be to the Dudley Boys what Stacy Keibler used to be. As a wrestler, Velvet Sky is in the same camp as Rosa Mendez. Okay, after 10 years or whatever it's been, if she hasn't gotten better by now, she never will. And the level of talent that they have in that women's division right now is such that there's no place for her as a wrestler on that roster. There really is no place for her. So unless she comes in as a valet, I don't see any obvious spot for Velvet Sky in WWE if that's where she wants to end up. Ring of Honor this week was made up of matches that were taped months ago at Korakuen Hall in Japan, as it will for the next few weeks. Apparently, they'll be airing matches from Japan. I haven't seen the entire show yet, but I did want to address one thing here, ROH-related, and it involves Adam Cole. Some people were asking about this. The official ROH Twitter account was telling fans that Adam Cole... Man, my voice is going here. Bear with me, but... The Twitter account was saying that Adam Cole will not be appearing at Global Wars and is not scheduled for any upcoming ROH events, which got people talking, obviously, and especially after Cole then tweeted out nothing but a photo of him and Finn Balor from a Rev Pro show some time ago. And immediately people said, well, he's on his way to NXT. I have no doubt that when Adam Cole is good and ready, he will end up working in NXT. I'm shocked he isn't already there, because I think he maybe he's a little on the short side, but he is the prototype of what WWE should want. You know, he's, you know, good-looking guy, great wrestler, great, great talker, and a great representative, I think, outside, you know, outside the ring for the company when it comes to media stuff. I just think he would fit like a glove. So I do think eventually he'll end up there. But according to Dave Meltzer, this is all part of an angle. This is not a case of Cole leaving the promotion or having a disagreement with them or a falling out or anything like that. It's all part of some kind of storyline that they're going to be doing. So I just wanted to set that straight. Lucha Underground had their tapings, and I don't read Lucha Underground tapings, so don't worry, I'm not spoiling anything here. But there was an injury at the tapings last night that was suffered by Matanza. And I don't even think this is going to air on TV because they ended the match early, so this may not even air, but it was a death match that he was a part of. And apparently he was supposed to put his fist through some kind of gimmick glass, but he ended up putting his fist through actual glass instead and cut up his arm pretty bad. He sliced open a vein, just bleeding all over the place. It looked really, really bad, according to the people who were there. It turns out it might not be as bad as it looked. He got stitched up. Hopefully he will not be out of action for very long. Obviously, if Matanza goes down with a major injury, I don't know where they are at this point in terms of their tapings for season 3, but that would be a big loss if he went down with a significant injury. So hopefully it's nothing that bad. As for the show this past week, we had Aerostar versus Drago for one of the 7 ancient Aztec medallions. Matt Stryker reminded us that these two had a best of 5 series last season, and it's a good thing he did because I completely forgot about that. Aerostar looked like he botched something pretty bad. He was up on the top rope, but he slipped. Looked like he hurt himself, too. He kind of fell down to the floor. He was favoring his hip for the rest of the match. So hopefully he's okay. This prompted Vampiro, when he fell off the top, this prompted Vampiro to say that, you know, when they step in the ring, every luchador accepts the fact that they might die. And that was, like, easy there. It's like, you know, of all the things that we've seen on this show, like, look at the insane dives that we've seen Angelico do. And of all the times to say, you know, this is a great example of what happens when you get in that ring, you could die. It's a guy that slipped and fell off the top rope. It's like, calm down. It is true. Every wrestler, they run that risk when they get in the ring, but I just thought that this was a little bit of an overreaction. Aerostar toughed it out. He hit a springboard codebreaker, followed that up with a Rey Mysterio splash off the ropes to win the medallion. Johnny Mundo is seen backstage training in a room somewhere when Taya walks in, and she tells him that she spoke with Dario Cueto, and he will be wrestling Cage inside a steel cage next week for one of the ancient Aztec medallions. And this prompted the Johnny Mundo line, Cage in a cage. And I don't have any doubt in my mind, this entire segment existed solely for the purpose of letting Johnny Mundo say that line. We had Jack Evans, PJ Black, and Phoenix against the Disciples of Death in a trios tournament match. This was a lot of fun down the stretch. It really picked up a lot of action. Jack Evans would not tag in for most of the match. He would tell PJ, hey, you're doing a great job, keep going. So this was amusing. Phoenix got the pin, so they advance in the tournament. Son of Havoc, Ivelisse, and Angelico are in Dario Cueto's office. He informs them that they will be competing in the trios tournament, even though they are the current trios tag team champions. Next week, they will defend those titles in a 4-way against the other teams in the tournament. So we go back to the locker room. Katrina confronts her Disciples of Death. They had one last chance, she tells them, to impress Mil Muertes, and they failed. And she's even more pissed off that it was Phoenix as the one who beat them. She says, give me one reason why I shouldn't destroy you. And Sinestro, I think that's his name, right? Sinestro? The guy with the purple mask. He pulls out the hearts of the other Disciples of Death. And I guess this impressed Katrina because she spared his life. Maybe if that was the punishment for losing matches in WWE, you know, wins and losses might actually mean something. But this was like a finish him sequence right out of a Mortal Kombat game. Remember Friday the 13th, Part 9, where Jason was basically just a beating heart for most of the movie that went from person to person? Yeah, that fucking sucked. Mil Muertes and Matanza in the main event for the Lucha Underground Championship. Two big bulls beating the crap out of each other. I loved it. I thought it was great. Mil got more offense in on Matanza than anybody else has so far. They brawled up the staircase and onto one of the balconies up above, so you knew something was going to happen. And this was not going to end well. Mil gives him a flatliner on the roof. And the roof caves in and they both fall through, which gets a loud holy shit chant, well deserved. And the match is ruled a no contest, and both guys, I guess, are left for dead. Mil Muertes is already dead, so I'm sure he doesn't mind too much. The show ends with a segment back in the police captain's office, the one who had sent Castro and Joey Ryan undercover to take down Dario Cueto. Best part about this is on the wall, so they have this kind of sweeping view of the wall in the office as they begin the segment. And on the wall they have a picture of Bale. Remember him? He got his face eaten off. And above him is the word deceased. And then under the word missing, they have pictures of Hernandez, Alberto Del Rio, and Big Rick. All of whom left in real life under, like, not the best of terms. So I thought that was great. There's a knock at the door. In walks Councilman Delgado, who warns her to stop poking her head around his jurisdiction being Boyle Heights. And he says his employer feels that it would be in her best interest to drop the case against Dario Cueto. And so she figures, well, he's talking about the mayor, because the mayor would be his boss. And he says, no, the person is far more powerful than the mayor. So we have some drama here as this storyline plays itself out. So that was Lucha Underground this week. Again, another really good show. Let's get to the mailbag. We got a lot of good questions here this week. You can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Maddie has a question regarding WrestleMania 2. And I wanted to mention this up front because I can't really answer it myself, so I thought, let's throw it out there and see if somebody else has a better idea as to what the hell happened here. He says, I was watching one of my biggest markout moments as a child, the Bulldogs beating the Dream Team for the tag team titles of WrestleMania 2. When I noticed something odd, during the match there is a smallish bald guy in a white shirt walking around the ring the whole time. He seems to be saying things now and then to the referee and to the two managers, Captain Lou and Johnny Valiant. During the match, Valentine gets rolled up by Davey Boy. As Beefcake attempts to enter the ring to make the save, the small bald guy grabs his leg and Brutus falls. The ref does a fast count and the Bulldogs win. Johnny Valiant does not sell a reaction to the bald guy, but he runs in and mouths off of the referee instead. The bald guy then runs off to the tag belts, grabs them, gets into the ring, and hands them to the Bulldogs. Do you know anything about this? Was the match running overtime with the LA leg of the show ready to begin? Was this a screw job on Beefcake and Valentine, who were maybe initially booked to win? Was this, or who was this guy at ringside? That's what he wants to know. It wasn't a screw job, I can tell you that. I went back and I watched the end of the match myself. The bald guy on the floor looks a lot like a referee from that era. I have no idea what his name is. But I don't know that for sure. Maybe he was a referee from then, maybe he wasn't. It may have been a timing issue. Like you said, it's very possible, because they were running from three different locations. If it was a timing issue, though, and he was trying to, let's say, prevent Brutus from breaking up the pin, it just doesn't make any sense, because it seemed like the planned finish. It seemed like everything went according to plan. Nothing really looked overly awkward. So I throw it out there to everybody listening. Go back and watch it. You know, it's up on the network. Take a look at the guy on the floor outside. Let me know if you recognize him and what you think happened here, because I don't get it. Luke has a question about the WWE wellness policy, which has been in the news recently. I've heard before that the wellness policy has changed every now and then, but a name that gets brought up a lot is Randy Orton. Why is this, and how many times has Orton failed? That's not such a simple question to answer. Officially, Randy Orton has failed twice. A third failure would mean termination. And as we saw with Connor of the Ascension, and I wasn't aware of this, but he left the company and then came back while he was still in developmental. That I did not know. So this was years before he even made it to the main roster. He got popped, he left, he came back. That first wellness failure, which happened in developmental, it stuck with him. And so, for example, if Jeff Hardy were to ever come back to WWE, it's not like he gets a clean slate. He'd start with two strikes, which is the way, you know, that's the way it should be. You shouldn't be allowed to leave and then have all your strikes removed and then immediately come back. So Orton's name comes up a lot because of what people have dubbed the Orton Rule. And the Orton Rule is this. Randy Orton got that second strike, right? WWE does not want to have to let Randy Orton go if he gets hit for a third time. So a few years back, they amended the wellness policy to include what they call a redemption program. And the way the redemption program works is, if you have two strikes and you can stay out of trouble for 18 months, you can request, I think you have to make the request, but you can request to have one of your wellness strikes removed. And then it's up to their discretion if they remove it or not. You can find this. This is in plain English. I mean, it's up on the WWE corporate website. The entire policy is laid out there. And there are those who think that this was done specifically to help Randy Orton. I think it's a little too coincidental that this thing was implemented in July, I think it was, in 2013. Very quietly, too. They didn't make any sort of public announcement or a press release or anything. They just very quietly amended the policy. People happened to notice it on their website. July of 2013 just so happens to be the same month that Randy Orton won the Money in the Bank briefcase. And the very next month, he won the WWE Championship. This was after a period of a couple of years there where Orton was just out of the title picture. I mean, he was, I don't want to say demoted, but he was very clearly not focused on for a period there of a couple of years. Not focused on the way that he had been for many years. I mean, the guy lost to fucking Kane, okay, clean, in the second match of WrestleMania the year before this. They clearly de-emphasized him. Now they bring him back into focus, and this thing gets put into place. It's a little too much of a coincidence. Now, you ask, how many strikes does he have? Officially, it's two, unless he was able to knock one of them off because of the redemption program, but there's always been controversy about that because there were a few times that Orton got suspended that did not count as wellness strikes. There was the whole signature pharmacy scandal that pops. I think it was something like 11 different wrestlers got popped in that whole thing. One of them was Randy Orton, but they never suspended him. So in reality, he should have probably had three or four strikes by now, but you know, that's how it goes. The wellness policy is interesting. You know, Adam Rose and Connor get knocked off there at the same time, right? They get knocked off at the same time, the same day they make the announcement that these two guys have been suspended. And those are the first violations that we've heard about in a very, very long time. Hornswoggle. Hornswoggle was the last one who got popped, but yet no top names. So we've got Adam Rose, we've got Connor, we've got Hornswoggle, and we're supposed to believe that everybody else is behaving themselves and not taking anything and doing the right thing and dieting and taking their vitamins. All's been quiet on the Western Front for a few years now when it comes to the wellness policy and the top names in the company. You know, I guess those undercard guys ought to start getting some tips from the top guys about keeping a clean diet. Kyle from East London, England. Should WWE be concerned that they are not producing their own homegrown stars and are having to rely on indie talent? With all the investment in the Performance Center, they have not really produced any of their own male stars. You know, it's funny. I guess they really haven't, have they? Until I got that question from Kyle, I was kind of thinking in my head of trying to come up with names. And, you know, Roman Reigns would be the biggest name they've made, I guess, if you look at where he is on the card right now. Bray Wyatt is another, I guess you would call him a homegrown guy. Baron Corbin. is someone I think they have high hopes for, and he could turn out to be a homegrown guy they have some success with. It's too early to tell. Same with Enzo and Kaz. I think they'll do well for themselves. But then you look at Seth Rollins, right? Indie guy. Dean Ambrose, indie guy. Daniel Bryan was an indie guy. AJ Styles was already a big name when he came in. Sami Zayn, indie guy. Kevin Owens, indie guy. Cesaro, indie guy. Luke Harper, indie guy. Apollo Crews, he was big on the indies before he came over. A lot of the names that are being focused on right now are not homegrown WWE talents. And then you look at NXT, and it's kind of the same thing. You got Samoa Joe now, who's on top as the champ. You got Finn Balor, Nakamura, Austin Aries, Hideo Itami. Honestly, I mean, on the male side, like in NXT, Jason Jordan and Chad Gable may be the only real homegrown guys there right now that are kind of already in the mix that I look at who really have the potential to be anything special. You know, and I'm not somebody that has a problem with them bringing in talent like experienced guys, indie guys, guys that made names in other places, TNA, New Japan, whatever. Whether it's Bobby Roode or Johnny Gargano or Tommaso Ciampa, I mean, I say bring them in. Bring in the best. Who cares where they're from? Who cares what their background is? If they're available and they want to come in and they've got a name and they're that good, bring them in. But I think Kyle makes a good point. It doesn't reflect very well on their own ability to create new stars when you have this multi-million dollar performance center and you've got this big developmental system, which they now say isn't really developmental, and, you know, on Breaking Ground, where they're, which was a whole show that was built around these up-and-coming stars. You tout Tyler Breeze as this great success story of somebody who stuck it out there for years and years, and he was honing his character and achieving some success with it, and then he finally gets promoted to the main roster, only to get jobbed out to everybody under the sun. I think they probably should be concerned about that, because they should bring in the indie guys, but at the same time, they should be pumping out some of their own. Tamor from Mississauga, Canada. Hope I said that right. Can you explain why a champion gets to keep the physical belt if their contract expires during their reign? Didn't promotions like WWE have exclusive ownership over their belts? Why did WWF have to pay Jeff Jarrett all that money for the Intercontinental belt that I assume was company property? I understand that it looks bad in storyline having the title vacated and having to come up with an explanation for the show, but I am sure Vince would have taken that route rather than paying Jarrett all that money. So you're a little confused. It was never about him holding like the physical belt hostage. I think it was more a matter of he was in a feature match on a pay-per-view. That was the night they wanted him to lose to China in the Good Housekeeping match. So this is actually kind of an appropriate question here. That was when China won the Intercontinental title. So what happened is you have this feature match on the show. It's on a pay-per-view. You've been building it up for weeks. This guy is the champion. And now he's coming to you and saying, you owe me, I think it was something like 300 grand. You owe me 300 grand. I want to be paid. And so Vince, you know, his back was up against the wall. It wasn't just, oh, this guy's the champ. It was, we have a big match on this show. What are we going to do? I mean, if Jarrett doesn't wrestle, we don't have somebody who we could just plug into his spot to lose to a woman. The issue was between Jarrett and China. And Jarrett had agreed to do the job to her. You can't just go find somebody else at the last minute to plug in there. So this wasn't about the physical belt. And I mean, it is their property. I mean, that was well established going back to the early 90s when Flair brought Big Gold over and then the NWA filed suit and that whole thing got resolved. The belt is absolutely the property of the company. It's like when Medusa dropped the women's belt in the garbage can. Again, I think that was something WCW got into a lot of trouble for. So this wasn't about the physical belt. It was about the fact that you had this big time match and this guy was going to pull out at the very last minute and you didn't have anything to replace it. And Jarrett claimed that this was money that was owed. It wasn't just like a power play to get more money. He claims this was money that Vince owed me and he was dragging his feet. And so I just wanted to collect. And I'm sure that there's truth to both sides of it. But it wasn't so much about the physical belt. Zach from Preston, England, what was the most shocking World Heavyweight Championship win to take place where you had that person completely written off? Completely written off? First person that comes to mind? I mean, if you could think of one better, let me know, but I think of Mark Henry. I mean, is there anybody who fits that criteria more than him? Here's a guy who was with the company, I think it's 20 years this year. So when he won the title, that would have been 2011, right? So even then, he had been with the company for a good 15 years. 15 fucking years this guy was with the company for. And I think he won the European title. Maybe he won the hardcore title. But he never won a major championship. He was never the world champ. He was never the intercontinental champ. He never got to that level. So after 15 years and all the injuries and all the gimmicks, he came in as the Olympian, and then he became sexual chocolate, and then he became a monster again, and all the different transformations that this guy went through. It's very rare that somebody like that, all of a sudden, 15 years in, becomes the world champ. But that's what he did. You know, that whole Hall of Fame persona, man, that worked for him. And credit to Randy Orton. Randy Orton put him over. He put him over clean in the middle, back to back. He, you know, the September pay-per-view, and then I think it was in a Hell in a Cell match. I bought it. I bought into it. I didn't give two shits about Mark Henry the year before that. Why would I? All of a sudden, I became one of his biggest fans. I bought into it because I can buy the fact that this fucking guy is a scary guy who's going to rip my head off. He was throwing people around like rag dolls, man. He was coming out there cutting some of the best promos he had ever cut in his life. He was believable in the role. So I don't know about you guys, but I had him written off. I was shocked he was still with the company at that point. Turn around, all of a sudden, the guy's the World Heavyweight Champion. So if you could find somebody better, I'd like to know who it is, because I think Mark Henry is the one who fits the bill. Rocky from Orlando, if there was one former WCW wrestler that you think could have one more run, who would it be and why? The figurative run being at least through two pay-per-views. I know Goldberg would be a go-to choice, but if you could think outside the box for this, I would love to hear your answer. Well, since you took away my answer, because I don't doubt that they could bring Goldberg in, and he can get more probably than a couple of pay-per-views out of him. I would probably have to go. It's tough because all the so-called WCW guys ended up being WWE guys, and other than Sting was the only real, you know, major name that up until last year had never even been with WWE. So I would have to go, I would go with Lance Storm. And I know Lance Storm is not a big star. WWE is, they're not going to bring in Lance Storm and give him like, we're going to bring in Lance Storm and give him a run with, you know, two paper, like he's fucking Brock Lesnar or somebody. He was not a big star, but he could still go. I mean, he just wrestled Matt Hardy, I think, in a match at WrestleCon. He's mostly retired, but he still wrestles from time to time. I know he's doing the training up in Calgary. A lot of his guys got signed by WWE. Emma came out of his school. Tyler Breeze, a few other people. And if you've seen him recently, he barely looks like he's aged. I mean, you know, he's got no hair on his head now. He wears glasses. Aside from that, he looks the same. So I don't doubt that you could bring in Lance Storm, who had a very nice run in WCW. A lot of guys probably don't have very nice things to say about their time there. And it's kind of surprising. Even Lance Storm is very critical of Vince Russo. He does not like him. But it was Russo, I think, who was writing and booking at the time when they put three titles on Lance Storm at once, right? I think he was the U.S. champ. I think he was maybe, what was it, tag team and cruiserweight. They put three different belts on this guy at once. He had a nice run going there. He was the first guy, a little trivia note, when the invasion angle started, he was the first WCW guy to pop up on Raw. So if I had to go with anybody, I would go with Lance Storm. You know, he could still go right now. Alex from Brooklyn. I've been listening to old episodes of The Sound Off on Podbean that I've never heard. I'm currently listening in 2010, and in one episode you mentioned your distaste for the fact that John Cena was a 9-time world champion, while Shawn Michaels was only a 4-time champion. So you know, Roman Reigns is now a 3-time champion, and his first reign was only last November. Just thought I would share that awful bit of information. Well, you know, what the hell are you going to do? It is what it is. Dwayne from Detroit, in your opinion, what is the most underrated pop of all time? When I first got that question, I had to think about, like, that. What does that even mean? Underrated pop, what I came up with is, I'm sure a lot of you guys remember this, and some of you maybe don't. One of the all-time classic episodes of Raw was in April of 2000. I think it might have been the go-home show before the Backlash pay-per-view. That was the show where Triple H and Chris Jericho opened the show. Jericho beat him, became the world champ, but then Triple H got the belt back. On that same show, Linda McMahon showed up. And Linda McMahon showed up to make an announcement that in The Rock's corner for his match with Triple H at Backlash was going to be Stone Cold Steve Austin. Now, Austin had been, he'd been gone. He had neck surgery in January. He was off TV. He was out of the picture. This was the first time that Austin was coming back. As soon as she mentioned Austin's name, I tell you, I mean, that fucking crowd, they jumped and they hollered and they screamed. They went nuts. And Austin wasn't even there. It wasn't even like she kind of led them to believe that he was about to come out, like he was there. She said that, you know, he'll make his return this Sunday and that person will be Stone Cold Steve Austin. And the crowd was so loud. Even as she was saying Austin's name, I could barely hear her speak. Now, she's a low talker anyway, but people went bonkers. And Austin wasn't even there. It was an announcement that he was going to be at the pay-per-view that Sunday. So that, to me, is one of the more amazing pops that I've ever heard, because you think of, oh, big pop, right? Big reaction from the crowd. Somebody's running out. Their theme music hits. They pull a mask off and they reveal themselves. Austin wasn't even there. It was a pop for an announcement. And his announcement pop was bigger than the pops that most wrestlers today get. So that would get my vote. Lou writes in, have you seen the video of Bobby Heenan over WrestleMania weekend? And why do you think WWE does not do more with him? I think if I'm thinking of the same video that you're talking about, I don't think it was WrestleMania weekend. I think it was in Philly at the old ECW arena. There were a bunch of wrestlers there. I don't know if it was a convention or just a big signing, but there were a bunch of people there. Bobby Heenan was there with his wife. His wife goes everywhere with him. She kind of helped communicate for him. Look, I mean, there isn't much they can really do with Bobby Heenan in his current condition. I get that. I understand that. I do wish they would do something with him if he's up for it. And my sense is he probably would be. If he's up for it, you know, fly him in for some shows. Show him sitting in the front row and waving. And, you know, if they wanted to do something, let him make a cameo in one of those videos they shoot for their YouTube channel. They always have legends making these funny cameos. You know, the guy still has his trademark sense of humor. As ravaged as his body is and everything that happened with the cancer and everything, his brain, no pun intended, his mind is still sharp. It's still there. You know, the old Bobby Heenan is still there. So I do wish they would do something with him, but I understand they can't do with him on TV what they would do when they trot out Sergeant Slaughter and Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Mean Gene Okerlund. You know, Bobby's not able to do that, so I understand that. But it's like, on the flip side, it's like one extreme or the other. It's like the guy doesn't even exist. I mean, every now and then I'll hear JBL sneak in a Bobby Heenan mention, but that's about it. Now, I did see the video of him at the signing and all the wrestlers coming up to him. It's always good to see, you know, Bobby out and about. It's upsetting to see him like that. But I have to say this. You know, in the comments section underneath the video, there was one guy who said, why does he keep doing these signings? He's upsetting people. He's scaring people. He's not providing enjoyment. First of all, fuck you. Second of all, maybe he enjoys doing those signings. You ever think about that? I mean, who the hell are you to tell him what he should and shouldn't be doing? I mean, what, should he lock himself away somewhere for the rest of his life? I mean, God bless the guy. After all he's been through, for even wanting to get out there and to interact with the fans, he seems to be enjoying himself. It'd probably be very easy for him to just sit at home and not want to leave the house. I mean, why? Because it upsets you? It upsets you that he should just stay home? He's not providing you with enjoyment. Well, I don't know. The fans that were going up to him and getting their pictures taken, they seem to be enjoying themselves. I had the chance to meet him a few years ago. And look, when you first see him in person, if you remember the Bobby Heenan of old, it takes you aback. Because you see the pictures online and everything, but until you see him in person, it doesn't really hit you. Like, wow. You know? So, absolutely, it takes you aback when you first see it up close like that. But it was a highlight for me to finally be able to meet the guy. I was wearing a shirt that said, you know, like, that's not fair to Flair. I think it was some barbershop window shirt. I specifically wore it because I knew I was going to see him that day. He's pointing at the shirt. He's showing his wife. Like, he, you know, smiling. Like, he liked the shirt. It was just really cool to be able to meet this guy. And, like, I don't have, like, hero. Like, did you ever meet your hero? I don't have heroes. You know, my parents were my heroes. I don't have fucking heroes. I don't watch TV and say this guy's my hero. But, you know, when I think back to when I was a kid growing up and watching wrestling, I had my favorites. And, you know, Hulk Hogan at one time was a favorite. Macho Man was a favorite of mine. And Bobby Heenan was my favorite. I am the biggest Bobby Heenan fan you will ever find. So for me to be able to meet him, even though after all he's been through and how things are now, for me it was a thrill. So I'm sure all those people in that video that were going up to him and getting their picture taken, a lot of them probably are old school Bobby Heenan fans who would just, they don't care about that. They just want to have a chance to meet the Brain before it's too late and they can't meet him. I was so fucking appalled when I saw that comment. It's like on the one hand, I kind of get what the person's saying about, you know, like not liking what he's seeing, but to say, you know, he's not being entertaining and he's scaring people. What is he, the fucking Hunchback? I mean, seriously, who the hell are you to say something like that? He's scaring people. Why do you go to those signings then? If you scare so easily, maybe you ought to stay home. Do the rest of us a favor. Anyway, Jared from Maryland, we'll do two quick buy or sells here. Jared from Maryland, buy or sell on the better wrestler manager combo, Vader and Harley Race or Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman? I got to buy on Brock and Paul. I got to do it. You know, they're the best. They're the best 1-2 combo that I've ever seen. Vader, you know, Vader and Harley were good together, but it's not like Vader needed Harley Race. Brock, in a lot of ways, needs Heyman, you know, for his mouth. They just work so well together. I think I got a buy or sell once that was similar. Somebody said the better combo, Brock and Heyman or Undertaker and Paul Bearer. And that's a close one, close enough that I honestly don't remember what my answer was. I think it was Brock and Paul, but that one's a lot closer. Just because the Undertaker character and the Paul Bearer character, like they just were so perfect for each other. But you'd be hard pressed to find a better combo than Lesnar and Heyman. I don't see who it is. And Brody in Vancouver, buy or sell on the more annoying chant, what or yes? Do I even have to answer this? I think the answer is pretty obvious. I don't even see what's so annoying about the yes chant. I could think of a lot of other chants that are very annoying. For example, this is awesome. 2 minutes into a match where a guy had a really impressive arm drag. This is awesome. Sit the fuck down with that. Or how about you still got it? They were chanting that at Chris Jericho the last time he came back. I mean, I know Jericho's in his mid-40s, but, you know, he comes, he goes. You still got it. No shit. There is no other chant. I mean, the you fucked up chant maybe is one of the more disrespectful chants, I guess, but there is no chant I could think of that is worse, that is more annoying, that has done more damage to the wrestling product than that stupid what chant. So obviously, I'm buying on what as the more annoying of the two. Let's do a positive tweet. This will be our second week in a row that we do this. Big E, this was actually, I think, last weekend. He posted two tweets that I thought were worth mentioning here because it really shows how far the New Day has come if you think of where they were at the beginning and where they are today. And even if you're not a New Day fan, you can't deny the success that these guys have had. This is what Big E said. He said, less than a year ago, we had to damn near beg for a single item on WWE Shop. This WrestleMania week, the New Day was number one in merch sales. This is thanks to everybody who decides to wear a phallus on their head, buy a box of fictional cereal, and wants wrestling to be fun. I love that. I wanted to share that here as the positive tweet, the power of positivity here, instead of doing a sad tweet this week. It really is, like I said, amazing to see how far they've come, and see what happens when you give three guys the chance to be creative and think for themselves and come up with ideas for themselves, and you let them go out there and be goofy and do their thing. That's how DX got over. And now the New Day's coming out of WrestleMania number one in merchandise sales. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster. You can vote in our Raw poll. I do expect to have that poll back up this Monday. As soon as Raw goes off the air, you can vote. And you can always leave us some love in iTunes and Stitcher. We are a 5-star rated podcast. Every time you leave feedback for the podcast, people perhaps who have not listened to the show before, it's very helpful. Brings in new listeners that way. And don't forget, we are now officially on Google Play Music. One of the many, many ways, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, Audio Boom, Podbay, Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher. There's a ton of different ways to listen to the show, including our own free app in the Google Play Store, if you want to listen to it that way. And a lot of you also use Podcast Addict. A lot of you swear by it, so that's another way. So however you are listening to the show, wherever you may be in the world, I just want to say thank you, and thank you again to everybody who donated to be part of the PayPal Rumble this week. I wish we could do a PayPal Rumble every week, but if you want to donate, you can do so on thesolemonster.com. Like I said, we'll do another one of those down the road. We'll spread them out a little bit. I'm not like TNA, where every week I have the need to have a gimmick match, because then they don't mean anything. You got to spread them out a little bit. Next weekend, I guess, is payback weekend, so we'll have predictions on the show next week. Until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a fantastic week, and we will see you next time, episode 438. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
Watch these promos on NXT. Watch Raw. Watch a Randy Orton promo or a Sheamus promo. They never, ever look at the camera. It's because that's what they teach them now. You are not allowed to look into the camera. I think it's just completely idiotic. Why are their eyes not on me? That's how interviews always work. They're talking to me. They're speaking to us. They're supposed to be speaking to the fans. Maybe that's part of the reason why these people can't make a connection with the audience. Because they don't fucking look at us.
The Monster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, The Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.